Hey, it's Canzano. I appreciate you listening to the podcast. Make sure you subscribe and give us some feedback. Also, the Bald-Faced Truth podcast, it's brought to you by Shoe Mill, my favorite shoe store with locations in Portland and Salem and online at shoemill.com. Shoe Mill, where we put the world at your feet.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to the Baldcast, a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth. BFFT. Live from the home studios presented by High Caliber Millwrights, here's John Canzano with the bald-faced truth.
I happen to work in an industry that has been in transition probably from the moment I stepped into it, maybe even long before. Maybe I'm just naive to it, but it's evolving. We all know it. We've seen newsrooms shrink. We've seen good reporters go off and join other entities. And I thought the best Ducks coverage offered by a local beat reporter came from Rob Mosley when he was with the Eugene Register Guard. Just a home run guy on a big time beat. But I also understand why he made the transition into becoming a University of Oregon employee, where he now covers the Ducks for GoDucks.com as the editor, runs some social media, does a great job. He's at all the games, and he is a must-follow. He's joining us now. Are you on campus today, or are you at home? Where are you working from?
Oh, no, I've been working from home since March. So I only live about a mile from the office, so I can drive by it every day and wish we were back to normal. But working from home still.
I am surprisingly productive. Like, if you had told me before, hey, you're going to work from home, you're going to do the show, I would have been like, oh, I'm going to be distracted. I need to be in a work environment. I have adapted to this. How are you doing with it?
I struggle with it. You know, I'm highly motivated by group dynamics, like being accountable to kind of the team around me.
Yeah.
And so that's a lot easier to feel that when I'm in the office around all my guys, and they're grinding and we're kind of all working towards this common cause. You know, it's all the Zoom calls we do and all that. It's great to feel some level of connection, but I do struggle working from home in that regard, just kind of missing the group dynamic and working with other people. I was a horrible athlete growing up. And I think one of the things I liked about working in a newsroom, and now what I do now, is kind of that team feeling. I got that sense of teamwork and team camaraderie that I didn't enjoy in sports because I was so awful at them, covering them and writing about them. So I do miss that dynamic.
All right, let's talk newspaper business, because you have unique perspective in that you have worked in the industry, you were successful in the industry, you cover the teams, and now you have a different vantage point to it. As you look back, it really makes me sad to see, like, not just in the state of Oregon, but across the country, what has happened to the coverage of the things people care about. What do you talk to people about when you sort of see the state of things?
Yeah, no, I agree with that. It's sad. It just makes me sad. You know, locally, you know, having worked at the Register Guard, you know, I was there for about a dozen years or so. And just seeing, you know, good people, hardworking people that I worked with losing jobs and the newsroom shrinking. And, you know, I don't have a great head for business, so I can't really critique, you know, a lot of the business decisions that have been made.
Yeah.
But it is tough to see, because journalism plays a vital role in a vibrant democracy. And, you know, you need people asking hard questions and writing tough stories and all those things. And lacking that is discouraging. I mean, you talked about kind of when you came into the industry. I think I was the last person hired to a sports position at the Register Guard into a newly created position. So basically the last position when newsrooms were still in any sort of an expansion mode. And that was in like 2001, 2002. And then, you know, things started to contract slowly, and then more quickly. And it, you know, yeah, just going to work was tough to see, because it was, you know, I sort of compare it, it's kind of a clunky metaphor, but I sort of compare it to like walking through a graveyard. You know, when there's more and more desks that aren't filled when people leave, and you have all these empty desks, it made it sad, you know, for the industry and for that particular company and for the people I worked with and had used to work with. So it's hard. It's disappointing.
Rob Mosley with us now, GoDucks.com editor. You can follow him on social media as well. And if you follow the Ducks on social media, you're getting a lot of Rob Mosley. You do a great job there, Rob, covering the teams. And I talked to a lot of Duck fans who are tuned into what you're doing. When you were covering Oregon as a beat reporter, what was the most fun you had?
Well, I think that, you know, the answer to that explains a lot why, a big chunk of why I took the job I'm in now. I liked the interaction with fans. I mean, when things went online, 2006, 2007, somewhere in there, you know, when I got on Twitter, I'm not very tech savvy, but one thing I am is a very willing guinea pig. And I had some mentors at the Register Guard, Kyle DeVaz being one of them. And Ron Bellamy was really empowering back then too, in terms of, hey, just try new stuff. And so, you know, having a blog that had comments, and obviously comment sections, you know, devolved, you know, over the following decade or so, to the point that now we don't see them in a lot of places. But when I had a blog that came online, when I got on Twitter and I could immediately start interacting with fans and get a sense for what they really wanted to know about, what their feedback was on stories, what they cared about, what they didn't care about as much. You know, before you had that sense of interaction, you just had to rely a lot on your own instincts. And you trained to hone those instincts and you worked as hard as you could to feel like you had the pulse of things. But as soon as you could start hearing from fans, you know, that was a game changer. That was really instructive. And you know, for me, it was kind of, my favorite part was kind of feeling like the ice cream man a little bit, you know, like I had access to help give these people a window into this thing they loved that gave them just pure joy in their lives, you know, except if on a football game day, if Oregon somehow fell behind in the game, then sometimes the reaction isn't so joyful. They don't like the ice cream that I'm selling. But for the most part, you know, that was my favorite part about it. And so kind of recognizing that about myself, kind of what I really enjoyed and what I really valued and kind of where that best fit played a big part in why I'm in the job I'm in now.
You can follow Rob Mosley at Duck Football on Twitter, where he covers the Ducks. You can also catch him on GoDucks.com now. We've had transition, right, with all these head coaches. It was like, you know, three decades of continuity followed by, you know, three coaches in 5 years or whatever it's been. What has that been like for you to kind of be on the ground there covering that?
I remember pretty distinctly the first practice of the Coach Taggart era and just how strange that felt, you know. To not see Gary Campbell out there and some of those guys who'd just been around here, Don Pelham, who gave their huge chunks of their lives to this program. That was really strange. It's a forward thinking business and you're kind of always on to the next thing. And, you know, the competitive energy that's in an athletics department, I mean, coaches are just the most competitive people on the planet. And so just the competitive energy that's just, you know, it's always about forward momentum and looking ahead. You appreciate those guys and you treasure that era. But the last few years have been pretty fun too. I mean, last year was really, really fun. I always told people, you know, when I was working at the newspaper, you know, I generally, you know, I liked it if the teams I was covering did well, because it meant A, in football, like a good bowl destination, right, to go pile up hotel points at a good bowl. And B, it just meant everybody you were talking to was in a better mood, which, you know, I think we could all appreciate. And my top priority was really writing a good story rather than whatever the outcome was. But now that's flipped on its head. And yeah, I mean, I'm invested in the outcome. There's no questioning that. There's no doubting that. And so it's fun to have that different perspective too, where, you know, I definitely feel an emotional investment in wins and losses, and particularly when there are wins to celebrate, seeing, you know, the staff and the athletes celebrate those is really, really fun.
You get a chance to be, you know, behind the closed door as well. And again, we're talking to Rob Mosley, GoDucks.com. And, you know, last season you got Justin Herbert and Penei Sewell. What was it like to kind of watch that team and those individuals have personal success and also compete because they've been through a lot with several changes and a lot of uncertainty in their careers.
Yeah, I mean, it was thrilling. And, you know, to be with those guys at the College Football Awards show, I mean, those are the kind of things. I mean, the week I spent with Marcus Mariota when we went to the College Football Awards show and then the Heisman ceremony was just, I could go another 20 years in this job, hopefully, knock on wood, and that could still be the highlight of the best week of my career. I mean, it was just a dream to watch him kind of experience that through his eyes. And so, yeah, last year was, for Justin in particular, I mean, knowing just how passionate he was for this program growing up rooting for it and how much pressure he put on himself to try to fulfill the goals he had for himself and for the program. And, you know, so to watch that kind of relief wash over him at the end of the Rose Bowl was awesome. I mean, the guy invested so much emotional energy over the years, mental energy, in trying to get to that place. And just to see that was amazing. And the whole post-game scene at the Rose Bowl was like nothing else. When they played Shout and the guys were celebrating, I mean, it was so pure. It was just such a pure expression of joy and celebration. Guys were so stoked. And somebody like Panay, who's different completely personality-wise from Justin and with how exuberant he is and just over the top. I mean, to watch him celebrate and enjoy himself in a completely different way and a bunch of other guys was awesome, yeah. So, I definitely treasure and value kind of getting to know those guys in a little different way than I did when I was working at the paper.
Give us an idea, because we don't get Panay Sewell in that way. What kind of kid is he? What, you know, he's got a smile on his face. He's obviously a tremendous athlete, but what's he like?
Yeah, he is about as outgoing and charismatic as a guy as there is on the roster. I mean, he's one of the guys on the sidelines before games that's in a huddle firing everybody up. He's one of the most prominent voices at a practice, you know, barking across the field at the defense, you know, making sure it's a real competitive vibe, competitive energy, but a fun competitive vibe, not like a, you know, I'm looking to fight everybody on the other side of the line. I mean, he doesn't take himself too seriously. He's laughing all the time, but he's also hyper, hyper competitive. He's a really entertaining guy to be around. I mean, he just exudes, you know, joy for the game, joy for competition, joy for, you know, being with his teammates, around his teammates, playing with his teammates. It's coming to practice every day with that kind of energy is a hard thing. And I think it's probably more of a rare thing than I think people know. I mean, it's not every guy that shows up every single day, ready to just throw it on the line. I mean, some guys, you know, can be a little up and down, but Panay's not up and down at all. I mean, he is always redlining the moment he hits the practice field every day.
Love that. He fits Mario Cristobal that way, doesn't he? I got to know, what is Cristobal like in the locker room after a big win or maybe at halftime or before a game? Is he as vocal as I imagine?
Oh yeah, no, he's pretty over the top. I mean, anybody who's seen some of the kind of the locker room juke videos that our digital staff has put out has a taste for that. But yeah, he is as fired up as any coach that I've been around in any sport. You can tell that, you know, he'll have gone through the whole week kind of bottling up, you know, whatever, various emotions, anxiety, tension, rage probably. And then he gets to let it out in those moments and just cut loose. And, he blows off some steam just like all the guys. That's for sure.
Have you been among the staff members tested? I'm trying to find somebody who's had a COVID-19 test and tell us what it's like. Have you had the test?
I have not. No. Yeah. I'm given my job and kind of where we're at in the competition schedules and all that, you know, I haven't had any need to be around anyone else, really. So, yeah, I think I would probably be pretty low on that list.
All right. So from a standpoint of, you know, you're kind of in the same boat as maybe some of the media members is, you know, we're all trying to figure out what's going to happen. Are we going to get a season or when will it be played? You have this additional job where, you know, you're kind of – there's a little bit marketing, but there's a little bit news in it. And I think you become more vital in this time because I think people are starving for, tell us what's going on, help us get to know the team, give us something to think about until games are there. What kinds of stories or things are you focused on kind of in that vein?
Yeah, it is a balance, I think, as you kind of hint at. Because, yeah, we want people excited, we want people engaged, but we also want to be honest and upfront too about how, you know, we're not 100% sure what things are going to look like. So, you know, now's the time when, you know, preseason watch lists are coming out and you want to celebrate those and celebrate the attention guys have earned, you know, to get fans hyped up about the season and the talent that the Ducks could have on the football field. But then on the other hand, we still don't know exactly what that's going to look like. So it is a tricky thing to do. You know, we were in a period of voluntary workouts. You know, we're starting to look ahead to what schedules will look like in terms of actually getting the team on the field with coaches and when, you know, a camp will start and things like that. And then it'll be full bore ahead. But, you know, you want to be honest with people that, you know, we don't want to just get you excited for something that, you know, no one's sure what it's going to look like or when exactly it's going to be happening too. So it's a balance to try to find right now. That's for sure.
Rob Mosley with us, GoDucks.com editor. Rob, before I cut you loose, like the professional sports landscape, they're all trying to get back to playing. The NBA's got the bubble. Major League Baseball, it's got spring training going in July. I know you're a hockey fan, too. If we can get only one professional sports league back, which one is Rob Mosley want back?
I will fully show my bias here. It would definitely be the WNBA. I'm just really, really excited this weekend for Sabrina and Satu and Ruthie to make their debuts. I've been a baseball fan and a hockey fan for a long time, and so sort of I know that, you know, these seasons are going to be weird and not what I'm used to.
Yeah.
And so I'm more looking forward to kind of whenever they get back to normal. But I, you know, I'm kind of just fresh to the WNBA scene, and I'm just so psyched to watch those kids play. I would skip the others and only watch the WNBA. I signed up for the league pass today, as a matter of fact, coincidentally.
Right.
So
that's
where my attention is.
It's so interesting because I found myself, I have daughters, I have three daughters, but I found myself really not just enjoying that team on the court, but in news conferences or interviews that I did with them. I really like them. They're easy to root for. What was the magic with that group? And to me, that goes down as, like, if we're talking about sports, like the tragedy sports-wise, seeing them be able to compete for the Final Four is the thing I'm always going to remember about 2020.
100%, yeah. You know, I think, you know, Sabrina Ionescu, first of all, you know, just being the leader that she was and the competitive energy she brought every single day, kind of we talked about with Panay, and how, you know, yeah, initially there was some pushback when she got to campus from some teammates who weren't used to that kind of in-your-face style that she brought. But then the fact that they all adjusted to that reasonably quickly and kind of got on board and said, hey, you know, she's driving the bus and that's the bus I want to be on, so let's go. And some guy like Ruthie, who's kind of the opposite of Sabrina in terms of that, in terms of personality-wise, you know, hyper-competitive, but not, you know, not really in-your-face about it. You know, for her to buy in and a player, and then prove to quickly be a player of her caliber as well, I think she really exceeded expectations early on in her career. I think she grew to be the player that, you know, that the staff hoped she would be, but early on, she really blossomed quickly. And so the dynamic those two built up, and then when you have somebody like Satu come in, how unique she was! It was just the perfect blend of talents and personalities, and you know, Satu, you know, somebody who was not afraid, who never, I think, was afraid to push back at Sabrina and kind of challenge her a little bit. They challenged each other, pushed each other to kind of be the alpha dog, and you saw different games when either one of them could rise up. And and then Ruthie was always there complimenting whoever it was having a big game with her playing the post. It was awesome. It was fun. And to your point, just the way they endeared themselves to everyone, kind of off the court with their willingness to show their personalities and be outgoing and be out front in the community. I mean, one thing I'll never forget, and I'm sorry to blather on here.
No, you're great.
The weekend after Kobe passed, was the road trip for the women when they went to play Utah and Colorado and Connecticut. And I made that trip. I planned to make that trip because of the UConn game largely. And then, you know, it became such this amazing window on the team and how they were doing and processing the wake of Kobe's passing. And Sabrina, I mean, she was wearing it in the moments when she wasn't at practice. Even at practice, you could tell her body language was just a little different. And she was going through a lot. But still, after games, particularly the Colorado game, the postgame scene at Colorado was bananas. Like, the entire court was full of kids wanting to get autographs and pictures taken with Sabrina. And she must have stayed out there for 30 or 45 minutes and did one with every single one. And you could see sometimes, you know, she was having to force the smile a little bit because her head was somewhere else. But she did it. And she's just one of a kind. And just, you know, the character she showed on that trip, I thought was really, really impressive.
Rob Mosley, it's a home run interview right there.
You're too good. I appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
You're going to come back on now. Sorry, man. You have no choice. I appreciate you, Rob, making time. Yep. GoDucks.com. Best place to follow you on Twitter, is it at GoDucks, or do you have another place that people should go?
Yeah, I have at Duck Football, and I have at GoDucks Mosley are my two personal accounts. You're going to be inundated. Just a warning for everybody. You're going to get as much Ducks as you could possibly want. So thanks for having me, though. I look forward to hopefully seeing you in a press box sometime soon.
Yeah, that for sure. Rob Mosley, there he is. I appreciate him joining us. All right, Anna's popped into studio. She's wearing tie-dye. We're going to find out about this coming up next. Been a different show today. I've done a lot of interviewing. My wife has popped into studio. We're going to pepper her now with questions. Why are you wearing tie-dye?
It's cool.
Is that a thing for you?
The 17-year-old in the household started wearing it, so I figured she's probably ahead of the trend. So I just, like the fanny pack,
I pay attention
to what she's doing and then follow suit.
Let's talk interviews, because earlier in the show, I had four interviews today. It's very unusual that I have four interviews, but I like interviewing people. I like listening to them. I like asking the right questions. I had a couple people on social media say, man, how do you know how to ask the right question? I don't script it. I just listen, and I ask the things that I want to know. And, of course, you've got to get up to speed, but you've interviewed a lot of people. What is the key to being a good interviewer?
Being a great listener, like you said. Because the problem with scripting questions is that you will miss often, the gems that the person you're interviewing is throwing out there. And because you're so focused on, it's the same thing as having a really good conversation, is if you're a good listener, you'll pick up on what the other person is saying. You'll ask good follow-up questions instead of be thinking of, oh, what's my next question?
I think you have to. And I think,
but a lot of people don't. Don't you see that all the time?
I think it comes with experience and confidence, because I think people who aren't confident interviewers often feel like, oh, I better have a couple of questions written down.
Sure.
In case I don't know what to ask. Maybe I did that, 20, 30 years ago. But here's the other thing. I think, if you want to be a good interviewer, go interview kids.
Right.
For a news story.
That's so true.
I went to Little League games in one of my first two jobs in newspapers. I was covering youth sports and Little League and stuff.
Yeah.
Try to interview an 8-year-old kid.
Oh, toughest interview you'll ever do.
So what do you got in your back pocket? Gum. Okay. How did you feel out there in the second inning? You know, it's like you really have to work. And then the other thing I think that makes a good interviewer is, it's not about, nobody gives a rip about the game, really. We all watch the game.
That's more your department, but yeah. No, nobody cares that much about how the sausage is made, you mean?
Yeah. Just tell us about the sausage maker.
Yeah.
Does he tie his shoes? Why doesn't he tie his shoes?
Why do you think people default to that? Because it's easier to ask about the technicalities? Because
it's finite. It's something that it's tangible.
Uh-huh.
You can say, hey, you went 3-for-4 and you drove in 2 runs, or you lost the game 21-17. What happened in the second quarter?
Yeah.
Rather than, asking them, more about them as a person, or maybe how psychologically what they were thinking.
Yeah.
I think one of the fun things that I've done with the football coaches is get to know Mario Cristobal and Jonathan Smith a little bit and ask them, what's game day morning for those guys?
Right.
Do they want to play a night game? Sit around all day thinking about it? Or are they eager to get onto the field? And does it eat them up if they have to go 6 or 10 hours waking time? What time do they wake up in the morning on game day? Can they sleep? Can they get a good night's sleep? Jonathan Smith at Oregon State said he sleeps like a baby.
Uh-huh.
Mario Cristobal is up at 5 a.m.
Yeah.
It fits.
Yeah. And all of that is exponentially more interesting than the X's and O's of the game.
Yeah.
And like, relatable, because we all have, like in life, we all have big moments that, you know, you have to try and get a good night of sleep the night before. Can you do it? And what's your method?
I remember Mike Riley at Oregon State telling me that he also slept well. Mm-hmm. It was kind of a, I've done what I can do. I just need sleep now thing. Mike Leach, who's now at Mississippi State, he talks about, you know, sort of the approach of, he's a real night owl. So he is always in that mindset, like Monday through Friday, whether it's the season or not, he's staying up till 2 o'clock in the morning, sleeping in.
Okay.
He just does. That's what he does. So game day, it's no different, especially if they're playing a night game.
Uh-huh. So he would have been highly opposed to that 9 a.m. kickoff.
No, it's ridiculous.
That would not have worked for
him. When are you at your best? What time is it if I say to you, all right, you got to be at your best?
Uh-huh.
What time of day
my
is it?
My best, like, overall, or my best creatively, or as a parent?
All right. If you have to do something important, or creative, or significant, or a workout, or whatever.
I'd say between 11 and 1.
Now, give me the exact time.
That's a two-hour window.
That's too wide. That's like a two-hour... Come on.
I'm only allowed to be at my best for, like, 60 minutes?
No, but give me the peak. When is you... When
11.
Are you...
11
a.m.
11 a.m.
You're at your best.
Yeah, because...
Top of the hour.
It's been long...
Wow, that's amazing. It's not like 11:04. It's a top of the hour, 11 a.m. Set a watch to it.
Give or take a couple, because I'm awake, I'm caffeinated.
Yeah.
And...
I got to be sure to be around you at 11.
I'm not worn down yet from, you know, 17 requests for... Whatever, you know.
It's a slow slide into insanity.
Unknot this necklace, please. Just the usual request.
It's really interesting. I'm at my best at about 2:32.
Really?
Historically, I have been like right around the 2:30, a little bit, just a touch after 2:30.
Really?
Yeah, like right now. It's 2:32. I'm at my best. You're getting because I'm on the home stretch of the show.
Uh-huh.
I am caffeinated. I'm refreshed. Got a great night of sleep, and I am literally like, this is my time. I remember if you give me a 6 a.m. workout, forget it.
Right.
My blood's like molasses.
Yeah.
But 2:32, I'm on thinner.
Does that apply to your writing too? Is there a window in which you write best? Because I don't think that's 2:30.
That's different. Because for writing, you have to be ready to write.
Yeah.
People say writer's block. That's BS. There's no such thing as writer's block.
Okay.
Does not exist.
Isn't that just semantics though? If you're not yet ready to write.
No. It's what people, I think if you haven't done it enough, you'll confuse writer's block for what the real problem is. You're not ready.
Okay.
And if you're not ready to write, you try to sit down and you start to write a paper or a letter or a column, it's no different. You don't know where to start, right? I have heard people say, I don't know where to start. Mm-hmm. I don't know how to start this. I don't know what... It just tells me you haven't done the work to think about what it is that you want to convey or report what you want to convey.
Mm-hmm.
As a columnist, or if I'm writing an investigative piece, especially, or an enterprise piece, I know if I try to sit down, like I have a big piece coming on the Pac-12, huge piece coming on the Pac-12.
Yeah. You've been working on that.
I've been working on it. I have twice tried to sit down and start to write it.
Yeah.
And realized pretty quickly, I'm not quite ready. It's not writer's block. It's not that I couldn't write it. I could write it. It's that there's a missing piece here that I'm trying to report and I need to make another phone call on it or maybe think a little bit more about it.
Interesting.
So, and the nuance of what I'm writing about for the Pac-12 is it's kind of inside baseball. I don't know how much the average reader is going to care, so I know that I have to really tell a story there.
Mm-hmm.
I can't just lay it out like newsy. Mm-hmm. It's got to be like, here's what the Pac-12 has been doing that you might want to know about. It's coming down the pipeline, by the way.
Yeah.
Pac-12, I can tell you this, Pac-12's nervous.
Yeah.
Well, Pac-12 might need some Pepto-Bismol. After this one. All right. What?
Oh, no. Go ahead.
But I'm at my best, and it's now past. It's 2:34 now. So I'm like,
downhill
there it
slide.
Was. There
oh,
it was.
Oh, wait. You're at your best, but it only lasts 2 minutes.
I peaked. I'm just saying there has to be a peak. What do you mean? Like, how long does your, like, 11 to what?
I had myself down for about an hour.
Oh, wow.
Of quality.
Showy.
Productivity.
A whole hour. Alabama Adriana, what is your time of day where you're at your best?
7 p.m.
7 p.m.
7 p.m.?
Another top of the hour. Wow. Set a clock to that. You could get a sundial on that. Hey, Alabama Adriana, how long does that peak last?
I would say about 2 hours.
You guys are showing off now.
She's young.
I'm just saying, like, there has to be, like, if you're working out and they put a heart rate monitor on you, your biorhythms, whatever, you would show many peaks and valleys in the course of the workout.
Mm-hmm.
You're not going to just go to the top and then plateau for 2 hours straight. There's a peak there, guys.
Okay.
Like, I summit the mountain. I'm at the top. Judah, what time is it when you're peaking?
I'm pretty sure I'm following what we're talking about right now. As a freshly married man, I've got a long peak. Yeah, it's just...
No, that's not what I'm talking about.
What?
That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about...
What is Judah talking about?
Judah's talking about relations, I think.
Oh, that's what it... Oh,
he's saying he's got a long peak.
Everybody's saying 2 minutes, 2 hours, and I'm probably split the difference.
I'm saying that if you want me, like, on, you're going to hire me to speak to a group for 10 minutes, you want me to appear at about 2:30. Okay? Come out of the gates firing.
I'm still shaking my head at how Judah dropped into that conversation.
He's recently married.
I guess so. Congratulations, by the way.
He's got his air fryer.
Did you use the air fryer yet?
No, we just took it out of the box.
Good job.
Can you snap a picture of whatever you cook? Let me know if it's worth
investing. Yeah, you're supposed to do fries as your first thing in the air
really?
Fryer.
Just why?
So you know. I did a whole episode on, like, with an air fryer expert on that expert show, and she spent like half an hour talking about the air fryer.
Can you send Judah and his wife
the
link?
Absolutely. Wow. Little bonus there.
I'm going to find this. Yeah, a little ninja. I love it. Thank you guys so much.
The Culligan Water Cooler Report.
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald Face.
Hey, sorry to interrupt the podcast, but if you want to listen to more of the Bald Face Truth Radio Show, including more of this segment that you're listening to, make sure you subscribe on SoundCloud and iTunes to the Bald Face Truth Radio Show. Thanks for listening.